Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, where stories of resilience take center stage. Today we are diving deep into the world of resilience, determination, and heavy metal defiance as we welcome a true warrior to the airwaves. Meet Paolo, affectionately known as the rock star of ostomates. Diagnosed with Crohn's disease back in 2012, Paolo has faced his fair share of battles. But instead of letting this chronic condition silence his dreams, he's turned up the volume and blazed a trail of hope for others. Crohn's disease, a chronic inflammatory condition that affects the digestive tract, is characterized by inflammation anywhere going from the gastrointestinal tract, from the mouth to the butt. Crohn's disease can lead to a range of symptoms, including abdominal pain, diarrhea, fatigue, weight loss, and malnutrition. In 2018, Paolo underwent a life-changing surgery, receiving a stoma that would become his badge of honor, a symbol of strength and perseverance in the face of adversity. Today, he's not just getting by, he's living life to the fullest, motivating countless of others along the way. Beyond the stage where he slays as the bassist for the heavy metal band Rotting Demise, Paolo stands out as a guiding presence in the online community. Through his social media platforms, at paolo.phoenix on Instagram and TikTok, he fearlessly shares his journey, offering a lifeline of hope to fellow warriors living in an ostomy and battling Crohn's disease. Currently rocking out on stages across Germany alongside his band, Paolo has graciously taken the time to join us and share his extraordinary journey. So grab your air guitars, crank up the volume, and get ready to be inspired. Welcome to the show, Paolo Hecker.
Hello. Yeah, let's rock.
Absolutely. Well, you are affectionately known as the rock star of ostomates, so I couldn't pass by the opportunity to have you on the show. You're actually my first guest with Crohn's disease, so I'm really interested to hear your journey and how it all started.
Well, I've given myself that title because I was looking for... There's like a lot of people with Crohn's disease or with ostomies that are into sports, great athletes. Some people do triathlons, some people do bodybuilding and fitness. But I was looking and I was like, okay, there's no rock musicians here. So I'm going to claim that title.
Yes, rightly so. Rightly so. I mean, that's how I found you on that platform. And you've already mentioned doing sport, people are actually living and thriving in an ostomy. But your story started with the diagnosis of Crohn's.
Yeah, that's the second part of my life journey sort of began, because I never was that much confronted with illness. Like, I had a bit of asthma when I was a little, but that was well under control with a little bit of like asthma sprays. But feeling really, really ill, that was something I didn't really know much about. And when you don't know much about things, you kind of like take it for granted, like, okay, being healthy is like the normal, and you don't really appreciate it. And then when 2012, I started to see how life could be if you're not feeling that well, that's when I got a whole new perspective on life and how difficult it can actually be if your body is doing things that you don't want it to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you share some symptoms? I mean, I mentioned some of them already, but how did you actually perceive, okay, you know, I'm not feeling well anymore, I've got to do something, I've got to seek help?
Yeah, it was a bit like, I'm guessing everybody at some point in their life, they had like a stomach flu that was pretty bad. But usually, you know that if you just wait it out a bit, like 1 or maybe 2 weeks tops, then it's going to get better. Mm-hmm. But it was like a stomach flu that wouldn't get better. It would just get worse and worse and worse. And after like 3 weeks, my doctor said, okay, something is going wrong because this is taking way too long. So he sent me to the proctologist that does like your intestinal scan from the inside. Mm-hmm. And yeah, then they told me this looks pretty much as a close case of Crohn's disease, because like the how the intestine looked from the inside was very, yeah, it was like a picture perfect representation of what Crohn's disease is supposed to look like.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And yeah, it came like from 0 to 100 in seconds. Like I was feeling super good. I was studying sports. I wanted to become a sports and Spanish teacher. Mm-hmm. I had my band back then, and I worked as a personal trainer. So life was going pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you couldn't do anything anymore. Like, because it starts with a very heavy weight loss. I lost like 25 kilograms in a few weeks.
Oh my
but
God.
I was also very in shape, so then you always lose it quicker because muscle weighs a lot. But I lost it all super quickly, and then I started getting like sick, and I had to vomit a lot, and I had diarrhea like 20 to 40 times a day, up to a point that you can't really do anything, because it could be like from 1 second to the other, you need to run to the bathroom, and you'd never have more time than maybe a few seconds to 1 or 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So doing things like catching the bus or catching the train or the driving, it wasn't really doable, because you never had enough time to reach the next toilet. So you just kind of become a hermit, because you get scared of doing things, because every time you try to do things, something goes wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that in itself is something that, a lot of people with Crohn's disease obviously have to face. And so you were diagnosed in 2012, but you only received your stoma in 2018. So you lived 6 years with the condition before actually something changed.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, I would attribute that to fear, but also to one of the seven deadly sins, which is pride. I was very prideful and in the things that I had achieved before I got ill. Like I looked very good in my opinion. And to me, the image of having an ostomy back destroyed every chance of ever getting back to what I had created, or like the image I was trying to become.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't accept this image of unperfection.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I was like, okay, I would rather keep on suffering and just keep having this hope of someday, I don't know, through a miracle, things could get back to how they were,
mm-hmm.
than just getting this life-changing surgery and then having the bag. And that for me was giving up. But now in retrospective, it's exactly the other way around. Like, not getting it was giving up, because that was just like hoping for a miracle that, to be honest, if you're just waiting and not really doing something to get better, which I wasn't, to be honest, that's not hoping or praying for a miracle. That's just waiting for death.
Mm.
And so actually getting that surgery was the brave decision, but I was too proud and too scared to do it for 6 years, until then finally it was like a life or death decision. And even then it was like, I don't know.
Yeah. What options did the doctors give you? I mean, surely you've spoken to your doctor about it when you were diagnosed, and what did they actually advise you? Did they advise you to just wait it out first and then have surgery, or was that never really a topic?
Well, the ostomy topic was a topic from the moment I got my diagnosis. Mm-hmm. The doctor already told me that he has a lot of young patients that have chosen to get the ostomy and that they were doing pretty good mm-hmm. afterwards. But I dismissed that idea immediately. And I was like, okay, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Don't ever mention it again. Give me everything else on options that you have. So everything on medicine and autoimmune suppressants and biologics. And we did it all pretty much. But I'm a strong believer in the power of your own mind and having the attitude of really fighting something or trying to get better. And I don't think that my mind was in the right place to actually use those medicines effectively. I was in a very passive and defeatist state of mind. I was like, okay, I'm ill, I'm not good, so give me some medicine to make me better. But I wasn't taking responsibility of doing everything I could do in my power, psychology-wise, and also maybe lifestyle-wise, like managing stress and eating as healthy as it was humanly perfect. I wasn't doing any of that. I was just, yeah, you have to fix me again. Okay. Like a total victim mentality. And I think that prevented the medicines to really help in the way that they maybe could have worked. Mm.
But you've mentioned some really key things here, you know, like basically having to take the responsibility for your health yourself, owning it and taking the responsibility. And first of all, there is no quick fix, and being of a positive mind attributed to you eventually, I suppose, taking that step and knowing, okay, I can do this.
That's super important, because until you take responsibility for your own health and your own psyche, you can have the best help in the world, but you can't, it's not going to do anything, because I had support from everybody. My best friends were there to help me out. My family was there, and they could have been there. They could have not been there. It wouldn't have made a difference, because I wasn't able to accept the help.
Yeah. Yes, and I suppose you weren't in the right state of mind, because you have to own it and believe it yourself. I mean, everybody can tell you, but if you don't believe in it, then regardless of what they say, it's not gonna change it or work for you.
True.
Yeah. So we're gonna have a short commercial break, and then I want to hear how your journey continued after making the decision on getting an ostomy.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back to Stoma for Life. I'm delighted to be chatting to Paolo. And he has just shared with us what actually his mental state actually was like when he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and how it prevented him for a long time not to actually get a stoma. Perhaps take us to the time where he actually decided, okay, I'm going to change my life.
Well, I think it was a combination of many things, and I don't want to give too much credit to one event, because I think it paints the wrong picture, but I'm still going to talk about it. I was like in a very, very bad state. And my mom, she always tried to get me to do anything else on top of getting like the traditional medicine ways of whatever your doctor prescribes you. Mm-hmm. But she was like, okay, let's see what can we do on top of that that can maybe help, like maybe osteopathy or acupuncture or whatever. But whatever she told me, I was always, no, I don't want to try it, because I wasn't really in the mood to really fight to get well again. So she was a bit desperate, and one day she researched a treatment with like a shaman where you smoke or inhale like a toad venom, so to say, and you kind of stop being you and you dissolve, and it's almost like being dead for a while and then coming back. That's how I would explain it. And she told me like, hey, I found this, it's very promising. Could you maybe just try this one thing? And if this doesn't help you, then I promise to just leave you alone for the rest of your life until whatever happens. And I was like, let me think about it one night. And then I don't know why I was in the hospital, and I thought, okay, maybe we'll give this thing a chance. So then we decided that when I got released from the hospital, then that we would go to visit the shaman in Spain and to try it out. And I did that. And it was very interesting because the process itself was, it felt a bit like an exorcism, like my mom recorded it. And if I hadn't seen the recording, I wouldn't think that what they tell me would be true, because I have no recollection of what happened. I just remember like going to sleep, so to speak, and then waking up, and I was very, yeah, I knew that I had cried and I was exhausted, but I was happy. But I was screaming the whole time, and it was a bit like an exorcism. It really looked like an exorcism. And when I came back from this 20-minute journey with the shaman, that was the first time in 6 years or 7 years that I was in the present moment. Because since I had my diagnosis, I had not been in the present moment anymore. I was always either looking fearfully to the future of the things that are still going to come, that are going to be bad, or I was clinging on to the past and being sad about all the things that I had lost in the past. But I was never in the present moment, either because the present moment wasn't a nice place to be in because it was painful, but also because I couldn't. My mind was all over the place. So I could never really feel the options that I had in the present moment. And after doing this shamanic ritual, I was in this forest in Ibiza. And it was the first time in 7 years that I could perceive the sunlight on my skin, and I heard the birds, and I saw nature, and I was like, wait a minute, this isn't that bad. Like, there's beauty in this world, and why am I so I don't know, hopeless and like seeing everything in gray and not really fighting to get better if there's like a lot of beautiful things still in this world. It's just my perspective that has changed. And I think that was definitely one of the key moments that made me take the decision to actually get the surgery and give it an honest try of actually trying to get better. And I think 4 or 5 months later, I had the surgery in Germany. I almost died because I was in a very bad state when I got it. It was like an emergency surgery a Friday night, and then I had a surgery on Friday night, and on Saturday again, and on Sunday again, because like the inflammation and the infection was already spreading around the body, because the intestine couldn't hold all of the infection, so to speak. So it was building waste of like the pus and everything of going into other organs. So they had to open me up and fix also my kidneys and my bladder, and it was like a big operation all around my lower body. And yeah, how's it called, the guy that operates on you,
Yeah, your surgeon, your
my
surgeon.
surgeon, he told my proctologist later that he didn't think I was going to make it. And my proctologist was the one who told me, because I was in a very bad state. And they were like discussing like, okay, they had me like in the intensive care for 2 weeks because I was so weak. But then one day it was like something switched, or I don't know, maybe there was like, I don't know, divine intervention. But one day I just decided, okay, I'm going to try to walk again because I couldn't walk. I couldn't get up from the bed.
Yeah.
So there were like two very nice ladies from the hospital that helped me out. And I had like cables everywhere on my body. From all the things that were pouring out of my body after the operation. So we just kind of got them together, and then they were at my side, and then I started walking. And the first day, I think I did 3 steps, and the next day I did 10 steps. And the day after that, I did 30 steps. And I think after a week, I was walking around the intensive care. And that's when the surgeon was like, wow, what happened? And then they let me go to the normal care unit of people that just gotten surgery. And then I could leave after 2 weeks after that and go to rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. And from then it got easier and easier. Like, sure, there were still some mental barriers of the things that you think you can't do anymore, like how do I do sports again? How do I start dating again? Mm-hmm. But the more you tried, the easier it got. And I think that like getting over this surgery and getting back to walking, and after that, everything was, compared to that, the rest was easy.
I can just imagine. I mean, that was massive surgery. And I mean, as far as I gathered, it was in the nick of time. I mean, you could have really died there.
Yeah, that was, yeah, I went to the hospital for a checkup, and the head surgeon came after the checkup, and he was like, okay, we have to operate today because your intestine can burst, like maybe tomorrow it's too late. And then he was like, okay, now you have to get an ostomy, or maybe we can't help you anymore tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
But that was the point where I decided, okay, then just give me the ostomy.
Yeah. Now, I don't know what it's like in Germany, but here in the UK, once you are waking up with an ostomy, you've got, they call them stoma nurses that come around and actually help you to acclimatize with your new life. And you only get discharged once you know how to handle your stoma. You said you were going to rehab after your hospital visit. What was it like? I mean, how do they proceed there in Germany?
Yeah, you had like ostomy specialists that came to visit you in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also get like a home care representative that is like, the home care is the people that send you your ostomy supplies, because
mm-hmm.
you can't get them yourself. You can just get the recipe and go to the pharmacy and get your bags. They have mm-hmm. to be sent to you via a home care company.
Mm-hmm.
So they also kind of have someone that you can talk to that, if you want, they can come visit you and help you out. So they came and visited me a week after I got released from the hospital and helped me with the first bag change at home. And also they advise you on what ostomy supplies to get, what would be good for you. And then I think a week after that, I went to the rehabilitation clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And there you kind of get also a lot of help from the ostomy professionals over there. Like, they help you with your back changes if you're feeling maybe not so safe with them. But after, I think, 2 or 3 changes that I had done from them, they were like, you can do this well enough, so you don't need to come down, because it was extra work. If you had to have it done by them, then you had to like wait in line for half an hour or an hour and get it done, and then you go back to your room, and that way you just got your supplies once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do it in your room. And it was nice to having the option of going there and asking for help, but also having the autonomy to do it in your room on your own terms, because that gave you a lot of confidence to do it yourself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I remember, look, I'm an ostomate now, just shy of 2 years. And I remember in the beginning, it took me forever to do this. And then afterwards, it's just second nature. I mean, it's something you don't really think about much. I mean, you just do it. And it's a matter of what, it won't even take a minute. But once you're presented with it, it's such a big mountain. It's such a huge obstacle. And but you've rightly said so. You just have to practice and do it and get your head around it.
Yeah, it's like the first time that you brush your teeth on your own when you're a kid. First time, it's like, okay, gonna try it like this and like this. And now as an adult, you don't really think about it. And I think as long as your ostomy is kind of like not having any specific problems at a point in time, then it's just like, yeah, brushing your teeth, having a shower.
Yeah. Now, you spoke about something really crucial, which I think is quite important. It's the mental health aspect. Now, obviously, I commend your mom for having gone to the shame and getting you on that journey already on, like you said, living in the moment, living in the present. And now, once you've had your surgery, obviously, it's a lot to deal with as a young person. And you said you had a lot of fears, which are, you know, rightly so. I mean, you've just had major surgery and your new life has just presented itself. And so how did you actually go about being as positive as you are now?
Well, it was a combination of just maybe pretending to be positive. And it's a bit of fake it till you make it.
Exactly. I know. I love that. I love that verse.
Yeah. And then you actually, from faking it, it actually becomes genuine. Mm-hmm. Because I was doing TikTok already before I was talking about my ostomy. I did mostly like comedy sketches because I think I have the potential to be funny at times. And then a friend of mine told me, like, I have seen a video of someone with an ostomy and he knew that I had one. So he was like, yeah, why don't you talk about your ostomy? Because people seem to be very curious about it. And I haven't seen someone do it in German, at least not on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to unveil myself as a ostomate. But then I kept thinking about it and I was like, yeah, why am I so against it? If it's a part of me now, so maybe it's a good thing that I can start talking about it publicly. And I already had an audience of maybe 60,000 followers or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like doing it just for me. I knew if I posted it, then people were going to see it. Mm-hmm. And the feedback was very positive. Like, people were like very curious and they had questions, or maybe they had a grandfather or grandmother or a mother that had it, and they talked about their experiences. So then I saw, okay, people want to get educated about it, or they're curious, so I'm going to continue doing videos about it. And the more I confronted myself with being open about it and showing it to the public, the easier it got. And at some point, you talked about like a badge of honor. At some point, people start seeing it as like a strong personality trait to have a disability and being able to carry it with, I don't know, some composure. Yeah. And then I just started seeing the possibilities of how much you can help people that were in that state of mind that I was before, with like not being able to accept the responsibility of dealing with your issues. And then it became sort of, okay, this isn't just for me anymore. This is like a calling that has been given to me, and I have to do it to help others. And as soon as you look at it this way, then you don't really think that much about what you think. You just think about the benefit that it's creating, and then you just do it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a huge benefit because, When I was diagnosed with bowel cancer, and I had 6 days to get my head around having to live in an ostomy, because that was the only option I could actually accept. The other one would be living next to a toilet for the rest of my life, which I clearly didn't want to do. So once I got my head around that, I looked at Instagram feeds. And people say you shouldn't go to the internet because there's so much negativity and there's so much doom and gloom around, especially around stories about bowel cancer and perhaps in your case, Crohn's disease, because there are also sad stories. But I find it very enlightening also to see younger people living in an ostomy being able to share it. And I thought, well, if these people can do it, I can do it as well. You using your voice, having had a lot of followers already and using it now, I think that's really, really important. And I'm sure you make, well, I know you make such a difference.
Yeah, I hope so. And the more people do it, the better for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have a quick commercial break, and then I want to hear more about your life now, and also, yes, your life as a band member.
All right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I'm joined by Paolo, all the way from Germany, and he's been an ostomate since 2018. He's just shared his incredibly touching and moving story about being diagnosed with Crohn's disease and having had major surgery and what his life looks like now after surgery, and what an influencer he has become through using his voice and sharing his experience in living in an ostomy. Now, I've looked at quite a few of your snippets that you make, which are absolutely invaluable, because I had a hernia last year because I was foolish. I picked up something and I got a hernia. And I saw you wearing those belts, and I thought, yeah, I have to wear a belt as well, because it's so important. And me being vain, obviously, everybody's vain. You know, I thought, will people see it? No, they don't see it. You know, unless I show it, nobody will see it. And I think that's, I really like what you do. I like the way you address so many subjects. Because it's not just about your daily life; it's about your physical activity, working activity, love life activities. There are so many aspects that you touch on.
Yeah, I have to get back in the rhythm of creating content, because for the last maybe 6 months, I haven't been doing that much ostomy content because I've been focusing on music a lot. Mm-hmm. Because There came a point where I was like, okay, I have done every single topic that an ostomate has in his life three times by now, because you can only talk so much about hernia prevention, and there's not like new ostomy challenges appearing. Like normally, if you live your life, you have the same challenges every week, I have gotten a little bit. Not lazy, but uninspired. But yeah, this is this interview is sort of like motivating me again to create new content and finding new ways of reaching people. Because yeah, I think it is important. And like you said, it's something that is in every aspect of your life, like being it relationships or hobbies or just how to get a nice sleep. And I think the more you create content, the more also people that see your content, they also get inspired to create their content. And maybe someone out there has like the best idea ever on how to sleep on your stomach with an ostomy, and we haven't heard about it because he hasn't gotten around to create content yet.
Yeah.
But maybe this will do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So whoever's listening, if you've got that idea, please spread it. Please share, because I think we learn best by sharing, and we learn from each other and see how we tackle our life and live our life in an ostomy. So yeah. As I said, you're working as a bassist in the band. You're basically doing normal and everyday things, and I think it's such a testament to having gone public and speaking about it, because I know that when I shared with my family that I wanted to do a radio show about it, the first thing my mom said, "Oh, but it's so private, you know, it's so intimate. Why do you want to share that?" And I just had that inner voice shouting, saying, "Well, I want other people to benefit from this and hear about it, and that it's not so bad," because you spoke about something right in the beginning. It's like a form of vanity. You know, living in an ostomy, you've got all these horrid pictures of what life could be like, but you clearly stated and you're clearly living a totally normal life with an ostomy. And I think that's what I also feel. I'm actually, my life is pretty normal. It's actually quite okay. I mean, I do have the C word hanging over me every time I go for my checkups, but okay, that's just my reality now. So
is it coleslaw?
yeah, who knows? Yes, let's call it that, because I don't like to use the actual word. I never ever say the word. It's just a diagnosis, because I do not define myself over the C word. I really do not. So, but let me just touch on Crohn's disease again. Obviously, living in an ostomy now.
Now you said my C word.
Exactly, that's your C word, unfortunately. So living with this condition, obviously, it hasn't gone away. It's been eased through the stoma. So what are the options? Can you have it reversed when it gets better, or what did the doctor say?
Well, that's one of the reasons I don't get my ostomy reversal, is mm-hmm. that it's not like the intestine is okay, but it's not mm-hmm. super good, so it's still it has some inflammation here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So probably if I had my reversal, then the probability of ending up in the same place as before I had my ostomy is quite high.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to risk the quality of life that I have now mm-hmm. just to get my normal bowel movements back. Like mm-hmm. it's not that important to me. I'd rather wait until a point where maybe the doctor says, okay, it's looking so good in your intestine that it's almost impossible that something can go wrong.
Yeah.
Then maybe I'll think about it. But until then, I'm very, very happy to be living with my ostomy. And yeah, as you said, my life is pretty normal. I wouldn't even call it normal. I would say I'm outperforming a lot of people that don't have an ostomy, because I have two yeah. bands, I have a job, I go to the gym. So if I can do it, anyone can. And that's also like a point of vanity that you mentioned. Like, I don't just want to survive and show people like, hey, I'm not depressed and I go to work. I want to show them like, no, not only can I live with this, but I can pursue my dreams and be successful at it too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think that people that have a handicap should lower their dreams or expectations. Like, what you should lower is, or what you should raise is, the amount of compassion you have for yourself. If sometimes you can't do something because you're just not feeling good, or you don't have the energy to do something, but you should never, I don't think you should make your dreams smaller just because you have a handicap. You should just be more accepting of that it maybe takes a little bit more time, or you might not be able to reach your 100% potential, but maybe you can reach 95%, and that's still great. But if you start lowering your expectations for yourself and your dreams, then it's like a circle that keeps on getting worse, because you lower your expectations, then you automatically lower your energy output, and then you have to lower your expectations again because you're performing worse. And I'm a big fan of trying to give your best, because that always, it's like a positive circle of give your best, then you know that you can do more, and then you do more, and then you know you can even be better. So yeah, try to just do your best regardless of your situation.
You know, that is just such a beautiful phrase, do your best regardless of your situation, and don't let a diagnosis define you. I think that's key here. You've gone through, well, you're walking your talk, and you've gone through so many things. You've seen it from both sides. And to hear you talk so positively about it is just such a, yes, it's such a gift that you can speak like that, because not everybody does, and not everybody uses their voice. So we're almost at the end of the show. I mean, you've said so many positive and wonderful things to people out there living in an ostomy or living with Crohn's disease. You are basically taking the fear away, because I'm looking at you now and I see a vibrant young man that's reaching for the stars, and that's, he is trailblazing. So I don't know if you want to say something as a closing statement to everybody listening out there. I mean, you've said so much already.
Yeah, I think the only thing you should be fearful about is giving up. Everything else we can manage, like even if the illness gets worse, well, no one says it can't get better again. And just as long as you keep on making the best out of the circumstances that you have, even if they are changing, sometimes they're better, sometimes they're worse. But if you keep trying to do your best with it and don't give up, then there's still a great life ahead of you.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Paolo. And I wish you an absolute great life. I'm going to be watching from the sideline, supporting you in spreading the word. And that's what we've done here, sharing the journey and letting people know that even a diagnosis does not have to mean an end. It's actually a beginning of something great in your case.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much, Paolo. All the best to you.
Thanks.